4.3% from baseline?
Yeah, that's a... That is so unimpressive.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Chemist Confessions podcast. I'm Gloria.
I'm Victoria.
And this is a human conversation on all the skincare science we talk about on the daily. And today, we are extra happy that you're here to nerd out with us, chemists, because this is a topic near and dear to your hearts. What are we talking about, Victoria?
Today, we're talking about vitamin C.
Yeah, we have so many good questions. There's a lot of interesting data, but actually, I had to really dig, and you guys, listeners of this podcast, really helped us put together this episode, because as we were putting the series together, I was like, we covered a lot, and there is a lot to cover about vitamin C, but honestly, it can get really messy, because when we're talking about vitamin C, we're talking about a family of maybe 8, 9, 10 different ingredients in skincare, so if we had to dive down the rabbit hole for all of them, it will take forever. So I pulled you guys what you guys use vitamin C for, and we decided to pull out each of these merits, and about 56% of you said you use vitamin C because you notice brighter skin. So today we're going to answer the question, which vitamin C is the best for hyperpigmentation?
Yes, and I'm excited about this because I feel like we actually don't dive into this too much in some of our vitamin C episodes. We kind of gloss over it because we're, you know, all about the antioxidant properties. So I think this should be a good episode.
Yeah, and vitamin C is such a big topic. It's going to be a multi-episode series. So stay tuned for that. Let's open this episode up with what is vitamin C?
All right. So vitamin C, a water-soluble vitamin that we all, I think, feel like grew up with, you know, and hear about, but obviously it's naturally found in fruits and veggies. And ultimately, I think it was put on the map because of scurvy. So a long time vitamin C all around. Long time vitamin all around.
Yes. Victor is absolutely right. Vitamin C is very familiar to everyone. You probably have heard of it for colds and how a lot of fruits and veggies are rich in vitamin C. It's good for you. And that's because once it's discovered, they realize fruits and veggies saves you from scurvy. Vitamin C in general in your nutrition is considered an essential vitamin, which means your human body does not make it on its own. Humans are actually one of the only animals that can't produce vitamin C. This includes a couple apes and even guinea pigs. We actually had this on trivia night, or we put this up. We created this post a while ago. I'm like, fun trivia fact for you. What do humans and guinea pigs have in common?
Yes.
And it's because we can't make our own vitamin C. But that is vitamin C from a nutrition standpoint. In terms of skincare, it's essentially an antioxidant, but it's also a lot more than that.
When we talk about it in the antioxidant form, we are specifically talking about ascorbic acid. However, we should review that vitamin C is now a growing and pretty large landscape now. And the main ingredient, ascorbic acid, is the one that is tied to a lot of the great benefits you hear about. And basically, the reason why vitamin C is on the map in terms of skincare. So it's tied to being an antioxidant. It's tied to brightening properties, as well as even increasing collagen production. So that's pretty much what's led to the, I think, explosive awareness around vitamin C. But we should mention that, you know, not everybody can handle ascorbic acid, but also it comes with such difficult formulation issues that this category has expanded to so many more derivatives. And some of those vitamin C derivatives you might have heard of are things like magnesium ascorbyl phosphate, MAP, sodium ascorbyl phosphate, SAP, sorbyl glucoside, THD tetrahexyldecyl ascorbate, and even 3-O-ethyl ascorbic acid. So you can see this category is growing and there's more out there, but these we would say are the main ones that you'll probably see a lot now in skincare.
Yeah, and I think even though ascorbic acid is the main one that put vitamin C on the map, there's always this mystique with newer derivatives because consumers get confused when they hear claims like vitamin C isn't stable, but this form of vitamin C is, therefore it's much better. Or this new spanking exclusive derivative is actually some X times more powerful than ascorbic acid, yada, yada, yada. But the reality is we do prefer ascorbic acid because it has that much more data, but that's not to say the other ones don't have any merit. So today, let's take a closer look at hyperpigmentation and talk about the data around ascorbic acid and compare it with the derivatives that actually have clinical testing on hyperpigmentation. But before that, let's take a break.
Speaking of antioxidants, we're taking a moment to put an ingredient on your radar, and that is silymarin. This molecule is a superstar antioxidant derivative from milk thistle extract. In skincare, it's not your average plant antioxidant. Silymarin, surprisingly, has a lot of good clinical data. It's even been benched against hydroquinone. So that's very exciting, but it comes with a catch.
Yep, silymarin is incredibly unstable and difficult to work with. But we like this ingredient so much, we were determined to put this in our Mr. Reliable moisturizer to bolster your long-term skincare barrier care. It took the two of us a solid year of testing, formulating, and retesting, putting all of our chemist brain power to work to incorporate this successfully without the cream turning into a poo color on you. So check out Mr. Reliable.
Pain.
We're incredibly proud. We are incredibly proud of this formula. And for all you podcast listeners, please use the coupon code CCPODCAST2024 for 15% off your first order. All right, we are back. Let's talk about the data. Let's see the testing.
All right, let's do it. Okay, so first up, let's talk about ascorbic acid and its data for hyperpigmentation. And you know, surprisingly, unsurprisingly, there is data and comparison data that is testing ascorbic acid against hydroquinone. So there is a study that actually looked at testing 25% anhydrous ascorbic acid in a glycerin formula. All right, so in this study, they are testing on 40 subjects. They had the subjects use this product, which was an open label trial. We should mention that. That means that the subjects know what product they're getting. And they're going to be using this twice daily for 16 weeks. And they want to look at things like the melasma severity index, which they call the MASI, as well as tool, skin dryness, and irritation. So we'll share the results here. And here you'll see the results of the index, and you can see the decrease after 16 weeks. And they also do share some black and white, which is kind of difficult, but before and after shots, which you can see there is a reduction. Well, you guys can pause it and take a look for yourself. But overall, you can see that there is that lightening effect of their melasma, although not completely removed, because that's just not possible with topicals, basically. Yeah.
I actually really appreciate this study. And actually, I tend to like studies that showcase how difficult problems like melasma is to treat. 16 weeks is a pretty long time. And if you just look at MASI score, that bar chart, I also appreciate that they start at zero, so they're not like inflating visually how impressive it is, even though there is a steady decrease. And you can see the general brightening of skin in the black and white picture. It's not exactly like sometimes you see in products like erases melasma in 8 weeks. That just doesn't happen.
And I do want to also mention, this isn't the only study. There are also other studies looking at hyperpigmentation for ascorbic acid. I just want to shout out very briefly a clinical that tested 5% ascorbic acid versus 4% hydroquinone. And this is a small study. They only tested on 16 subjects. They did split face. And then the other thing that I thought was really weird was that they only had them use it once a day, which I feel like for hyperpigmentation is a pretty tough test. And so after that, they did still see that hydroquinone had outperformed ascorbic acid. The hydroquinone side saw a 93% improvement versus the ascorbic acid side saw only a 62.5%, but an improvement nonetheless. And so I think I just want to mention that ascorbic acid clearly is not going to be the only ingredient that you're going to use to treat stubborn hyperpigmentation, but it's definitely an effective active to add to your routine.
Yeah, and I really like the study. It kind of highlights that hydroquinone is one of the gold standard, and we really value studies that test ingredients against the hydroquinone. And a lot of times with hydroquinone, the biggest downside, of course, is the side effects. In fact, in this study, 11 out of 16 people experienced some sort of side effect with hydroquinone, whereas only one person had any sort of reaction with ascorbic acid. So again, if this is not an ingredient for you, ascorbic acid is fantastic to include in your routine.
Yeah. All right. So that's ascorbic acid, right? That's the main mm-hmm. squeeze. But I think if I were to, I feel like if you were to look at the vitamin C landscape now, especially for those with claims around brightening, I think mm-hmm. it's now predominantly derivatives. I don't think it's, I think ascorbic acid is, I feel like that segment is slowly getting dominated by all these other guys.
I think you're so right, because ascorbic acid, based on the classic positioning of SkinCeuticals C ferulic, is so tied with yeah. being an antioxidant that they, yeah. I don't know if brands feel like, oh, this ascorbic acid is really saturated and people don't associate mm-hmm. with brightening. So they turn mm-hmm. to a derivative saying, this is a compound for brightening.
Yeah.
I will
yeah.
say, when we were digging for that data, though, it got a little awkward. So let's dive into one of the derivatives with more interesting data, and that is MAP, magnesium ascorbyl phosphate. There's a Korean study that's relatively small, but I think it's still pretty insightful. They did N equals 20, and they tested on a forearm. I kind of like tests like this, but just know that these types of pigmentation is not the same as testing on someone that may have melasma or pigmentation from other sources. What they do is yeah. they irradiate skin with a certain dose of UV light to artificially mm-hmm. create a square of pigmentation from UVB. And the point of the study is actually for them to highlight licorice root extract and how it brings synergistic efficacy to brightening your pigmentation. So they have every cream that they tested. Well, first of all, there is a blank control cream with no actives. And that is square number 27. We'll put it up on the screen. Just also note that they're not in order. So square 27 has no products whatsoever. Square 28 okay. has a cream that just has 3% magnesium ascorbyl phosphate. And then the other squares have the same 3% magnesium ascorbyl phosphate. And then 1%, 2%, 3% licorice. To see, like, as you bump up the licorice root extract, does that bring more efficacy? And you can see the before picture on the left, where I will say the downside to this picture is the lighting of it looks like the upper corner is a little brighter. Mm-hmm. When they induce pigmentation, it's supposed to be the same severity, but just because of the nature of the picture, the bottom looks a little darker to me than the top.
I was going to say it feels like the irradiation was not on an even plane, like as in that when the lamp could have possibly been angled. So that like that's my reason, because I agree. Like if you look at T0 and the two bottom left squares, those are the redness of that is so much feels more than the rest.
Intense.
So it makes me think the intensity on one side is slightly, it's not an even plane. And this is us getting very granular, you know, like I feel like, you know, with studies like this, this is kind of those like really nuanced details that can surprisingly make a difference in the results. So if you match it up with week 8's picture, I feel like I have a lot of questions, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like it's not as direct as you might hope from a study like this. Mm-hmm. You can tell that it's designed so that they're hoping to say, hey, licorice root brings a synergistic effect to vitamin C, to MAP, and it increases with dose. But if you look at the picture, you're like, wait, hold on. 28 is just a MAP. Compared to the control cream of 27, it doesn't look better.
No.
Maybe and, if you squint.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at 27, I'm actually glad they did a left and right, because even the 27s don't match, right? So you almost feel like you're like, I think my takeaway here is I'm hesitant to make a strong conclusion, but I would generally say that it could be helpful.
So like Victoria said, it's important to look at the study and go, all right, this is an early study. It's interesting, but the goal here is not to draw any firm conclusions. I think my main takeaway would be 3% MAP seems a little low. It doesn't seem to be doing much here. Licorice root is an interesting combination. We'll probably talk about this ingredient later in other episodes. But again, kind of like the vitamin C one, maybe the takeaway is vitamin C isn't strong enough by itself. But I love that there is a second study we can dive into. And this time, it's using 10% MAP. This is a Japanese study, and we're going to have to take the abstract for what it is a little bit, because it is behind a lot of paywalls and a lot of language barriers, and I, for the life of me, cannot crack it and get to the actual data. But I think it's still worthy of sharing. The study in general goes, a cream containing 10% magnesium ascorbyl phosphate was applied to the pigmented area of 34 patients' faces twice a day for 3 months. Again, that long timeline when it comes to pigmentation. They measure a color difference meter that showed the color of these pigmentation for 26 patients. So 26 out of 34 patients were lightened due to this topical application. This amount of 26 out of 34 might sound, I don't know, it might sound a little lackluster to you. You're like, wait, so a whole 8 people didn't see any difference. But with pigmentation, that's kind of normal. So we'd say this is promising. But what's also interesting is magnesium ascorbyl phosphate cream was also applied to the non-pigmented area. So to normal, healthy skin. They just want to see lightened skin in general. So, but this cream was also effective in lightening on these healthy skin, but only for 11 out of 27 healthy subjects that they did this to. So I think this is much more interesting. I think based on, you know, the first study is only 3% and this is bumped up to 10%. We would say this is a telltale sign that if you are thinking about trying MAP, definitely aim for the higher concentration to make a difference. If you don't have pigmentation that's induced by post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation or UV damage or other conditions, you might not see much of a difference. It might be in the background maintaining skin tone, but you're not going to see that huge lift and brightening effects.
And I think I'm just going to call out, I feel like this is a very Japanese study where like whitening is like the goal.
Yeah,
whereas
it's really big.
I think in Western countries, that is not really the goal.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah. And I think that's actually such a good point, because I realized that might be confusing. It's like, wait, it lines pigmentation spots, it's good enough, or why are we talking about non-pigmented skin? But yeah, yes. A general whitening of skin is still considered an aesthetic standard.
Yes, very sad. So like someone with my skin is like a yellow undertone, they would want me to whiten my skin to be very fair and porcelain white. And so it's just a different world there.
Yeah, for sure. I tell people that I'm considered to be kind of tan there, and they're like, what? I'm like, oh yeah, no, I'm pretty tan there. That kind of sums up the MAP. And I'll be honest, when we were doing the research for ascorbic acid, there are a lot more studies looking at it at different angles, different skin benefit, but we still kind of have to pick and choose the ones for hyperpigmentation that we want to highlight. For magnesium ascorbyl phosphate, that's it. I really couldn't find much else to share with you guys.
Okay, but I have to say, I think this one's already pretty good.
Yes.
What do you think, Gloria?
Good is very relative here.
Yes. Compared to some of the other ones.
Yep. And I should follow up with, when we were digging around, we purposely only want to share data on human clinical studies on human skin. So we decided, you know what, like, we're not extrapolating. If it didn't make it to the human portion of it, not good enough to share. And so we want to share one last ingredient that has human testing, and that is THD ascorbate. This one is a little special because ascorbic acid is water-based, so is MAP. But THD ascorbate is the oil-soluble form. And this one is kind of, it's a little newer, right? It's a more of an industry-specific molecule. And for a long time, it didn't have a lot of data, even though it became really popular. What's kind of funny is that it was always positioned as it's oil-based and super stable, but it's kind of not.
Yeah, I think like people always think that like when we talk about derivatives and we're saying obviously to combat the instability of ascorbic acid, they're like, then it must be stable. And we're like, it's all relative. It's not, it doesn't mean that it's like 100% stable. It's just more stable. And I think that's the key word people forget.
Yeah, it's very relative. So basically, the industry has been looking into THD ascorbate stability profile. And one of the studies and directions that they took this is they combine it with an ingredient called acetoxyndrome. That's a different antioxidant, and find that the two combination help stabilize THD ascorbate. There's a separate study on just the stability portion of it. But I love that this study, they looked at the actual efficacy of THD ascorbate to make a selling point that, hey, you need this combination for it to be stable enough to bring any sort of skincare efficacy. Which I think is so important because there's so many products out there. I'm like, I'm very skeptical, but I don't know how to begin to talk about this.
Yes, 100%. Okay, so What was the study?
They tested this on two separate groups. One group just got a 5% THD ascorbate serum, and the other group got another serum that has 5% THD ascorbate and 1% acetazidrate. There's 20% in each group, and they used this twice daily for 8 weeks. These 40-some-odd test subjects, they kind of run through the gamut of evaluations. They tested for wrinkle severity, pigment intensity, redness. Mm. Yeah, the works. But for this episode, we're going to focus on their pigment intensity study. And we'll put the bar up in the video. You'll see that the THD ascorbate group with the acetazidrate, it looked like the improvement was, wow, I don't even know, like threefold better.
Threefold.
Yeah, it's impressive and it makes a huge difference. But then we're going to zoom in on the y-axis a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a key thing to take note of.
Yep. I mean, if you look at the y-axis.
It just feels, I feel like it feels kind of sad when you have to stretch the y-axis to 6.
Yeah. So the y-axis is percent change from baseline. So without the acetazidrate, the pigment intensity improved by a whopping 2% over 8 weeks. And then after 8 weeks, if you use the acetazidrate group, it improved by 4.3% from baseline.
Yeah, that is so unimpressive.
Yeah, so I just want to say, I think THD ascorbate does get positioned as one of the new vitamin C derivative darlings. It's oil soluble, it's super stable, it's not. And it's X times more effective than vitamin C, yada, yada, yada. It's good for this, it's good for that. It's an antioxidant, it can brighten skin. But just based on this, we're like, wow, it's kind of bleh.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like to save THD, you're going to have to test at a higher percentage. And hopefully that paper will come out. But I mean, THD alone, I mean, I would actually like to test the placebo formula and see if you have a baseline improvement.
Yeah,
for sure. You could fix that with maybe sunscreen. Like, I don't really know. It's hard to do anything with this.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like calling this something you should incorporate in your pigmentation routine is just really premature. So that's it. I think this actually really sums up the derivatives that actually have human testing data. And we have to talk about the really awkward kid in this circle, which is ascorbyl glucoside.
Yes, very much, because it's so popular, especially in Asian skincare.
Yeah, ascorbyl glucoside has a really big reputation for being the whitening, brightening form of vitamin C. I think more people associate this as a brightening ingredient more than even ascorbic acid. But a lot of the data I can find are in vitro. It's in that petri dish stage. I could not for the life of me find a clinical on ascorbyl glucoside.
I don't know if you remember this, Gloria. When we did our ascorbic acid deep dive, we talked about the whole saga of like the AOX race. And I don't know if you remember, like it was a couple labs competing and ascorbyl glucoside was like that fourth child that was like, me too, let me check it out. And then since then, I don't think you and I were able to find any data following that. And so I just feel like my conspiracy theory is all of that data is like locked in a Japanese vault somewhere, like some Japanese pharma beauty company somewhere. But it is so hard for us to talk about this, but it seems to get the name itself is more famous. Mm-hmm. It just feels like maybe they didn't even need to test it because the name carries alone. I don't know. So it's just one of those where I feel like you and I always are hesitant to say anything on it.
Yeah, for sure. And I do believe there's probably a secret Japanese vault somewhere with ascorbyl glucoside data because it's so popular in Asia. I spend so long digging around just because I'm like, there has to be something. I couldn't find a goddamn thing.
Yeah, I believe it. All right. Yeah. So, I mean, to sum up. We should sum up. Mm-hmm. All right. I think, Gloria, you and I can agree that ascorbic acid has the better data out of all of these guys, even when it comes to hyperpigmentation. I think you just can't compete with the historical prevalence of it and just how long it's been in the research space for. So that makes a lot of sense, you know, and we would say that, you know, it's definitely a shoo-in to add to your hyperpigmentation routine.
Yeah.
And then I think MAP deserves to be in that conversation as an alternative for sure. Even though the data isn't, there isn't as much, but I definitely feel like it is promising and hopefully we'll see more out there.
Yeah, I think those are really good points. And I think I almost feel like when people, one of the questions we got most commonly when we were polling you guys about vitamin C questions is, okay, is ascorbic acid really the best? But just based on the data we can find, even though the studies we shared in this episode are relatively small, there's still more. Even just these indicative kind of smaller studies, the AA studies have more subjects. The AA studies has a bench against hydroquinone. And it was really hard for me. I really couldn't find any comparative data on these derivatives. So just that alone makes we have to recommend ascorbic acid. MAP promising, again, based on the data, we would aim for at least 10%. Anything less than that might not pack enough of a punch. And then we have to talk about THD ascorbate. It is a little bit meh. And funny enough, the one study that we didn't cover in this episode on THD ascorbate that shows interesting, promising skin benefits, it was actually used in combination with ascorbic acid.
Ah, yes. There you go. There you go. That's the key driver.
Then, kind of sadly, it's hard for us to recommend reaching for ascorbyl glucoside right off the bat just because we couldn't really find solid data around it, even though it has such a big reputation. If you have used an ascorbyl glucoside product and swears by it, let us know. It's just, it's a difficult one for us to talk about.
I think Milano C, Gloria, is the one that has ascorbyl glucoside and does get a lot of raving reviews, but that one is a blend of different vitamin C's. That's not the only vitamin C in there. I feel like that's the only one that's like really like push the ascorbyl glucoside narrative.
Yeah, and I think we'll double check this, but I think even their main, they have a whole line, right? They have the toner, they have the cream, they have the serum. They have that anhydrous thingy in a tube that I think it's even used in combination with AA, but I have to double check the ingredients.
Yes, exactly. It's a blend. Yep.
And I think the last takeaway here is even though vitamin C as a category has a big reputation for hyperpigmentation, even looking at the ascorbic acid data, our takeaway is that AA is the best. Therefore, you should use it if you have hyperpigmentation. Our takeaway is our recommendation is more ascorbic acid is an important part of your hyperpigmentation routine. If you want to tackle melasma or very stubborn hyperpigmentation from UV exposure and whatnot, ascorbic acid alone or vitamin C alone is not going to give you really super like dark spot erasing results. It's just one part of the puzzle.
Totally. We are going to discuss vitamin C in our hyperpigmentation routine in our next segment, but we should take a break. If you've dreamed of taking part in a skincare launch, please join the Chemist Crew Product Incubator. It's easy and free to join. Simply fill out a skin type questionnaire and our team will match you with an ongoing study to test out the latest and greatest prototypes that the chemists are working on right now. We've already had several successful studies that have shaped fan favorite products such as Blank Slate, Baby Steps, Gentle AHA Booster, and our Miss Reliable Moisturizer. So head to the website, click the incubator tab, and look for the form to sign up. All right, so we should wrap up this episode with a really quick recap on how to use vitamin C specifically in your hyperpigmentation routine. I think, first of all, we can mention that most of the vitamin C derivatives, aside from THD, are going to be water soluble, which means that more likely than not, they're going to be in some sort of aqueous serum. So you're most likely going to be using this in the early part of your routine, unless you are using a THD. Some of them are actually in face oils and in moisturizers. So you're going to be using that specific ingredient probably in the later half of your routine.
Oh, and we should say this is a category. You should definitely decode that IL. Sometimes you see the molecule name as part of the product name or in their promo material, but more and more we are noticing products are just being called vitamin C serum, vitamin C treatment.
Yeah.
And you know which form of vitamin C you're getting. And this is pretty important here.
Totally. I distinctly remember, I think there's like two vitamin C face oils out there and they're both actually quite similar in active profile. I think it's Sunday Riley's CEO Glow. And then it might be like Herbivore's like vitamin C. They both use THD, and there's one that uses significantly more than the other one. And so I think it's important to also keep that in mind when you're decoding, because, you know, especially for THD, we shared how the data is a little lackluster. You're going to want more of that ingredient. Mm-hmm. And so I believe it's the herbivore that actually has more than Sunday Riley. So that's just another decoding tip out there. And then finally, I think the thing I wanted to ask Gloria on this is, after looking at all of these studies, a lot of them are using vitamin C twice a day. Right. How do you feel about that? Especially, I feel like that's very different than someone who's like an antioxidant minded person that might only be using it during the daytime once. So I'm just curious and getting your thoughts there.
I think it depends on your skin goals. Because like we share in just the hyperpigmentation realm, vitamin C is a great supporting ingredient, but it's not the heaviest hitter. So if you want a visible difference in terms of brightening and hyperpigmentation, I would say twice a day is totally fine. This is also a category where you should listen to your skin. I am very low pH tolerant, AHA tolerant. If I use a ton of vitamin C all the time, twice a day, once in a while, I don't get full-on irritation, but I find myself a little itchy-faced. That just kind of depends on your skin type and your skin tolerance. Anyway, so yeah, that would be my take. And I think ultimately doubling up is not a bad idea, but it definitely also depends on what else is in your routine, right? So if you have a lot of heavy hitting actives, if you also have a retinoid, if you have AHAs, do you need to be layering all the actives every day, twice a day? I don't really think so. Again, like, our philosophy is always you do what's manageable, what you can do consistently without irritating your skin. So yeah, that's my take.
Yeah. So hopefully that is helpful in building your routine, especially with hyperpigmentation. And we should remind you guys that sunscreen will carry you so far. There is no point in doing a hyperpigmentation routine without sunscreen. But, you know, ultimately, if you guys have any questions on this, please write to us. Hopefully this episode has been helpful. All right, Gloria. So with that, where can they find us?
You can find us on our website at chemistconfessions.com. You can write to us at info@chemistconfessions.com. We constantly poll you guys and share tidbits from the podcast on our Instagram at chemist.confessions. You can also DM us there with your questions. But otherwise, you can also comment on this YouTube video below. We will see you guys next week.